The Preakness means that there are two episodes this week of the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. The first is a pop-up available now with Las Vegas bookmakers and horse players Chris Andrews, Johnny Vello, and Dwayne Colucci. They analyze all 10 horses in this weekend's race. Today's regular episode from Baltimore features Hall of Fame trainer Dwayne Lucas, Medina Spirits exercise rider Humberto Gomez, and Maryland Jockey Club TV host Naomi Tucker. Both episodes are available now at vsin.com/podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, sponsored by First Bet. Welcome back to the program. It's Betting Across America. We are presented by BetMGM. I'm Mike Pritchard, your host out here in Las Vegas. Your other host is James Salinas out there in Denver, Colorado. And James, getting back to some of these tough schedule situations in the National Football League, we can go with the Chargers. You know, the Chargers may be up against it. There's a lot of people looking for a progression here with the Chargers, even though they got a new head coach, a new coordinator for a young quarterback. But yet, a nice win total here at 9. The over is minus 115, the under minus 105. What do you think about the Chargers?
Think about the team first, and let's talk about the personnel. I think that this is another team that always deals with so many injuries, especially defensively, a lot of injuries. It seems like every year, Derwin James is going down. Need to see him on the field. The kid's got a lot of talent, but got to stay healthy, and other players on that secondary. If they can stay healthy, I think defensively, with the pass rush, with Bosa coming back the way, if he's healthy again, I like what we've seen out of the front four. I don't know about that. I'm not so concerned about the front four. It's more so the back end. Let's just call it that. That the safeties and those linebackers, that's a concern here. And I think the biggest concern for me offensively is going to be the offensive line still moving pieces, parts around. I know they got Slater at the left tackle, so that's going to be helpful. But you're going to get a rude awakening, young rookie. Welcome to the NFL, because your first game is going to be on the road against the Washington football team. And that front four, which to me is the best down line, they collectively the best down lineman that they have in the NFL, so that's going to be a challenge. And then digging into the schedule here, Pritch, not easy to go face Washington there in that defensive line, come back against Dallas. Dak, we'll have to see how Dak's going to respond to getting back on the field, but Dallas has 10 days to prepare because they open the season at Tampa. Not easy for Dallas, right? But now you have plenty of time to prep and go play the Chargers, and then you're back on the road and go play Kansas City. So early season, it's going to be a challenge there, just those three games alone, and then you're going to have, before your bye, and they kind of have an early bye, but you're going to play the Raiders on Monday night, followed by a game against Cleveland, and then finish up at Baltimore before your bye week. So I think just to begin the season, it's a challenge right there for the Chargers.
You know, James, I love doing these shows with you because I get to file away so many notes that I take. It's because I'm just getting and absorbing so much information from you. And I want to ask you this question because I've always thought about it from a player's perspective, but not from a sports betting perspective. And it's in regard to the Chargers and the dynamic of this football team. So they have a lot of veterans on that defense, guys that kind of know what they're doing, or they believe that they know what they're doing. Offensively, a little bit young, but yet they have an entirely new coaching staff coming in. So from a player's perspective, I'm like, okay, this coaching staff, they're going to have to establish credibility. From a betting perspective, do you even factor that in, or is it solely 100% about this roster?
I factor in the coaches too, and early in the season, Pritch, especially let's call it the first month, maybe longer, depending on the team and depending on the coaching staff. I'm looking early in the year. I'm sticking with teams that I'm betting on, that I'm going to be firing money on. I'm taking teams that I know are intact, not a lot of transition, whether it be through personnel and or coaching staff. And I think here you're talking about the coaching staff with Brandon Staley coming over. Yeah, remains to be seen. You talked about the credibility. Let's see what that looks like from the player's standpoint to be able to buy in. I think the other side too is for the coaches, it takes time. You're going into a whole new situation, and now you've got to learn this full roster. You got to learn. You can see what you see on tape, but so much of it is going to be played out through games to really get a sense of who the players are and who best fits some of the schemes you're going to do, right, Pritch? So I think it just takes time. Not that Staley can't come in and be a good head coach, but it just takes time for these new coaches to get acclimated, not only to their team, but now the new responsibility. This is a first-time head coach. It's not like he's bounced around and he knows the job when it comes to being, in a sense, your jefe, right? You're the boss, and everything bubbles up to you because it's not just about the X's and O's and dealing with personnel on the field. lot of stuff that happens off the field, managing personalities and egos, a lot of things you got to do as a head coach that you didn't have to do prior to taking that job.
Right. I mean, it's all about having your guys and certainly having the respect of the players in the locker room. You could have a great roster. You can have a lot of talent. Everybody's got talent. But can you work together? You know, and from a betting perspective, I would assume that that's going to be important when you cap these situations, even with win totals.
Thinking about what we just talked about the last segment, right, with Miami.
Right.
And thinking about the culture and thinking about accountability. A lot of times I'm betting against human achievement, especially in the National Football League, because injuries are so prevalent and it's just such a it's so hard to remain consistent when it comes to your level of play, not only through injury, but your opponent from week to week. It changes. Game mm-hmm. plans change. Coaching matters. You know, games, a lot of times games are won during the week and preparation. So coaching matters and execution matters and accountability. All of that is a big piece of that. I bet on accountability. I bet against dysfunction. So a coach like Flores, that's somebody I'm willing to bet in certain circumstances because I know this team is focused. They're going to be disciplined. They're going to be prepared. That's the hard part about new coaches for me to jump on and say, I want to bet on these guys early. I need to see it play out. So I'm either a lot of times betting against these new head coaches coming in, rookie head coaches, or I'm just waiting and just assessing. So when it comes to the perspective of betting, it's usually betting against the rookie head coaches. I'm usually not jumping on board and firing on them early.
All right. That's awesome. Man, I love that. Writing this stuff down. Okay, Bears, a little bit different dynamic here because you have a coach that's on the hot seat, probably on his way out. And can he survive with a new team or a younger team or a young quarterback? The Bears win total 7.5 to give you the hook there. Over is minus 125. Under right now is plus 105. James.
Accountability again. Mm-hmm. Talks about accountability. Talk about buy-in. So we saw some changes as far as how the Bears kind of structured their game plan started to evolve, or let's just call it change. I don't know if it was evolve. Not a good word to use with that team. They started running the football more, and they made a coordinator who was making the play calling and the play calling duty shift. They started running the football in the latter part of the season and actually had some success, and that helped the quarterback situation out because it wasn't all put on the quarterback's shoulders to have to go make plays. Now, thinking about is there buy-in from this team and this roster? I know with Fields coming in, that's a big upgrade. I suspect I'm hopeful that's what it is. I like Justin Fields. I like his toughness. We saw that play out in the college football playoff last year. But that's a lot of pressure on a rookie, especially considering you look at this offensive line. This is not an offensive line that I feel like I want to bet on right away. A lot of moving parts. It's not a solid offensive line. There's no cohesion up there. And then I just don't know what the identity of that offense is going to be. Are they going to start off trying to run the football, especially beyond an offensive line like that? Mm-hmm. Who's going to be the quarterback? Is it Justin Fields? Is he going to start day one? Are we going to see the Red Raider back there starting week one? I'm not really sure. So it's really hard to gauge right now where this Bears team is going to go. Aside from the schedule, just looking at this personnel, I think the other thing too, Pritch, is we've talked about the defense. We know for years that defense was very solid there with Fangio, and really that's how they competed, and that's what year in, year out, that defense was going to keep them in games. This is not quite the same defense that we've seen over the years. A lot of those, you talked about coaches wanting their guys. Fangio wanted his guys. He's basically got that Bears secondary here in Denver now. So it is not the same secondary that we've seen in years past for the Chicago Bears team. And I don't know if I'm not really sold on that linebacker core either. So I don't think this is as good a defense as what we're used to seeing to keep the Bears in games, which to me, with a suspect offensive line, puts a lot of pressure on the rookie field. Having to come in and be the savior for that franchise right now.
Right, a lot of pressure on the head coach too, who's on the hot seat. I think the GM's on the hot seat too. So, James, you look at this roster, they're going to have a new defensive coordinator too with the Bears. Pagano, I think he's back in Colorado now, just retired, I believe. So there's three monsters on this defense. Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, certainly, Roquan Smith as well. Allen Robinson still there offensively. But outside of those names right there, I mean, I don't know how much more they have to work with. I'm thinking that they're hoping that they've hit with Fields here at quarterback.
Well, you mentioned Mac. Mac's got to stay healthy. Can he play a full season? Yeah, when he is healthy, he's as good a pass rusher as there is in the NFL. You also mentioned Roquan Smith. Now, he's got a terrific motor. The guy's all over the field. I see him out of position a lot, misses a lot of tackles on the interior, and I think that really kind of hurts their run defense. And Hicks too. Hicks is another. He's going to be a space eater in there and terrific mm-hmm. player on the interior when he's able to stay healthy for a full season. But aside from that, you're right. It's that secondary I think is the biggest concern for me for the Bears on that defensive side. Complete makeover at the cornerback position. Whether it's Trufant coming in or, you know, they got younger there with some of the draft picks, because that secondary is not the same as what it was a few years ago when Fangio was there. Like I said, there's a few of them here in Denver. I'm not going to say I don't like where the Bears are going. I like the move that they made. They had to do something, not only from a quarterback standpoint to try to help them solidify that position into the future, but some damage control over how they botched that draft a few years ago, moving up to go get Trubisky. It's been just a tough sledding for them to live that down in the city of Chicago, because obviously you path on players like Watson and Super Bowl champion Mahomes that they decided they didn't need. They needed Trubisky instead. So looking at this Bears, and then we look at the schedule, Pritch, and this is going to be a challenge for them. This is, I think, for Chicago. Yeah, this schedule, just from start, I think the division, that's probably where the division's one of the weaker ones, especially if whatever happens with Rodgers. This is one of the weaker, more mediocre divisions, let's just call it that, in the NFL, in the NFC North. But just really looking at this Bears schedule, something that kind of jumps off for me is for the Bears, they don't have any successive games, whether it's on the road or at home. It's constantly alternating. You're at home 1 week, you're on the road the next week. So I want to get your perspective here, Pritch. In that scenario where you'd probably like to have a couple successive home games. You really don't want to have a lot of multiple games on the road, especially some of those teams that have to do like three straight games mm-hmm. or four out of five road games. But in this case, alternating home and road, do you get in any kind of rhythm as a player if that's the way the schedule plays out for you?
I don't think you think about it as much, James, at least, you know, from that standpoint. You know, if you're losing, everything bothers you. I don't care. It doesn't matter where you're playing. We got to fix this. If you're winning, you're looking forward to your next matchup. It doesn't matter if you're on the road or even at home, really. And so it's all about confidence. I think when you start to think about the schedule that way, that means you have a lot of other issues going on. Most teams that are winning, okay, let's just line up and play football.
Here's the other part too, Pritch, is pressure on them. You talked about pressure on the head coach. Well, they're going to get a number of primetime games. What do they have? I think they have four primetime mm-hmm. games that you're going to see them first, whether it's Sunday night, Thursday night, or Monday night. They're putting them out there for, let's just call it, almost a quarter of their season. They're going to be on primetime. Well, with the bright lights, you got to step out and perform. You don't want to have ugly performances out there. What happens in those primetime games if you're not even, you're going to struggle with the offensive line. If Fields is back there, it's a rookie curve. Even though it's a big upgrade from Trubisky, it's still a learning curve for a rookie. What happens when this team, and I think on the defensive side, not as strong as what it's been, doesn't perform well in under the lights in prime time? Even more pressure on the head coach, Pritch?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's going to be a ton of pressure on this head coach regardless. They have to get off in the right direction. They're going to have to play well in the beginning, or everybody's just going to start stacking those bricks on top of them. Seriously, I mean, they're going to find and start looking for somebody else. We know that's going to happen in Chicago if they don't get off to that hot start, James. The other team with a tough schedule is the Washington football team. Their win total is 8, the over minus 140, the under plus 115. So I like the fact that we have 17 games, and because it's a pass-fail situation. So when I see teams with 8 as their win total, I'm like, okay, these teams are going to sink or swim. Seriously, I mean, it's either you're going to win 9 games and you're going to have a winning season, or you're going to not win 9 games and then you're going to have a losing season. There's no ambiguity. There's no 8-8 situations anymore.
For Washington here, we talked about culture change. We talked about it with Brian Flores in Miami. I don't know if there's been a better job done when it comes to changing the dysfunction of a franchise than what Rivera did coming in last year and having to write all the stuff that was going on off the field, things with the players, all the distractions that were happening, and some of it to not to the players or the team for that matter. Some of it, a lot, some of those things coming from the ownership, with Rivera really going in and really bringing a sense of accountability, and had issues at the quarterback position that he had to deal with. That's where I think you talked about buy-in, Pritch. When you have a coach that you know has that pedigree behind them when it comes to the accountability, and that everybody is expected to perform, not so much performance on the field, you're going to talent, some of that can dictate out, but when it comes to effort and concentration through execution, accountability, when you're not holding up your end and bringing what you're supposed to bring as a professional, doesn't there just continue to lend buy-in to folks on that team, players on that team that really want to be, that appreciate that and understand that this is a job, we are here to compete, we are competitors, we're professionals, we're professional athletes, we have buy-in here? Those are the kind of things that I like to bet on. I bet on accountability, I bet on chemistry and culture, and that's Ron Rivera and the Washington football team.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. I think Fitzpatrick, he's going to earn that respect too once he gets in that locker room. I think all those younger players are going to call him Pops, but still like him though. He's a likable player. And then you got a number of first rounders on that defense up front too. So looking forward to Washington football team to pass this year. Coming up next, we can bet on teams with the least regular season wins. The odds are out. It's coming up next. Indeed believes less is more. That's why they have powerful tools to help you source, screen, and hire quality people faster. Learn more at Indeed.com/credit. Welcome back to the show. It is Betting Across America, and we are presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard, James Salinas with you today. James, I know you don't like to bet on dysfunction, which when you want to look at these futures, I mean, that's what it is, right? Teams, the odds are out for teams with the least regular season wins. And I'm looking at these teams and I just see dysfunction. Let's start at the top with the Texans. They're plus 240. The Lions taking out people's kneecaps. They're plus 350. And then the Jets. I mean, it's the Jets, like Brian McFadden yesterday. It's the Jets. They're plus 800. Any team you willing to bet on from a future standpoint with the least regular season wins?
You're right. I bet against dysfunction. I bet against bad culture. And I think when you talked about new coaches coming in, that's the thing. Whether you're a coordinator or you're a position coach, you're thrust into the head coaching role, you know, now your span of control extends as far as responsibility goes. And it takes a while for those to get in. So I think for the Texans, Lions, and the Jets, although for the Lions, I think at least the offensive line, you've got a solid offensive line there for Detroit. So that's a plus for them with Jared Goff. Jared Goff excels when he has time and everything's his hand is held for the play and everything is textbook for him there. So I think for Detroit here, I don't think I would want to go with either of those. I think Texans are going to be the worst team in the league. So looking at that number, plus 240. But just to talk about this and dig down a little bit deeper, looking past the dysfunction that is the Texans and the Lions, and I think for the Lions, have to clean up from Patricia. We talked about accountability too, Pritch, and It starts with self-accountability, and that was never Matt Patricia's strong suit. He was throwing players under the bus left and right. It starts with you. Point your finger at yourself first, and I think that's when the accountability starts to stretch out from there. But let's dig down and look at the Bengals here, sitting at 11-1. And I think with the Bengals, Joe Burrow, for one, great quarterback, tough kid, he's going to be a great player in this league. Love his moxie and then his abilities as well. But when is he going to get back on the field? He's not going to start week one. I'm not sure when he's going to get back onto the field. And whenever he gets back onto the field, Pritch, he is not going to be at full strength. We're not going to see the same Joe Burrow this coming season that we saw the first half of the season before he got hurt. And he got hurt late in the season, right? It was right around the end of November. He didn't have surgery until sometime mid-December. I don't know if he comes back at any point, but even if, let's say, he comes back in the second half of the season, I know that the schedule for the Bengals is favorable. as opposed to the second half. If you look at, if you break the season down in half, the first half is definitely more favorable when it comes to like the winning percentage, the lower winning percentage of their opponents as opposed to the back end. But is Brandon Allen a quarterback, the backup quarterback, is that who you're going to trust to go in there and get you some of those wins against some of these lesser opponents here, especially with the suspect offensive line and all the holes that are on that team on both sides of the field, the offensive line, especially on the defense too? This is a team that I don't know if they're going to get this. I think the Texans, like I said, will be the worst team in the league. But season win totals, I would bet the under with Cincinnati. I think they're going to have a rough season. I don't know when Burrow comes back. But when he does come back, that's when he's going to have to play. They'll be more competitive when he gets back. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to be at full strength. And that's when they play the tough competition. He'll keep them in the game and keep them competitive and exciting. But he's not going to take them over the top and beat some of those tougher teams in that second part.
Yeah, well, they have 4 wins last year. Least regular season wins. You have the Texans right there too. So what about the Jaguars? 10-1. I think when you have to bring the circus to town, which is Tim Tebow, you're not very good.
Yeah, well, this circus to town. Urban Meyer, I'm not really sure. We'll see how long he's actually going to
right. I mean, he could quit mid-season.
Right, exactly, right? It's not the first time he's kind of not in mid-season, but, you know, his track record for sticking around for quite a while and retention of his services doesn't have the greatest of track records for sticking things out. And that's what he's going to have to do with this team. This is a team in total rebuild mode. You know, I think that's for the Jaguars. The Jaguars they only won one football game last year. Mm-hmm. Bad football team. Definitely huge upgrade at the quarterback position. And I think they had a few pieces on offense at least to keep fans keep their eyes glued for 4 quarters, whether you're in the seats or watching the game on the tube, because they are going to put, I think they'll put some points on the board, because I think they're going to be behind in a lot of games. But I think for Jacksonville, yeah, it's going to be difficult for them, but difficult somewhat of a difficult schedule when you think about just internally within a division with the Colts and the Titans. But I think right there with Cincinnati at 11-1, even though I think the Texans are going to be the worst team, that's probably where I'd go with Cincinnati, because we're not going to see Joe Burrow anytime soon to start the season.
I agree with you. That does look great on the board right there for the Bengals, and they are 11-1 when it comes to teams with the least amount of wins in a regular season. Come up next, our VP of Digital Content, Ben Fox, joins the program. He's coming up next. Preakness is Saturday evening, and VSiN has everything you need to get a betting edge. Visit VSiN.com/horses to find our full race coverage and picks from horse racing specialists. Plus, get a special offer from our partners at First Bet. First Bet is giving $20 in free bets for all new users who sign up now using the promo code Vegas20. Also, everyone who redeems this $20 free bet will receive full access to VSiN subscription products for free. From now through the Belmont Stakes, sign up now and you will get analysis and wagering on every race with AI-assisted picks, secure payments, attentive customer service, and a reliable website. Go to VSiN.com/horses now for this special offer and expert analysis on the Preakness. That's VSiN.com/horses. Welcome back to the show. It's Betting Across America, and we are presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard, James Salinas, your host today, and our special guest in studio right now is Ben Fox, VP of Digital Content here at VSiN. Ben, how are you?
Doing well. I was in Joshua Tree, a little brief vacation here, came back refreshed, maybe a little less pasty than I usually am, you know, maybe a little tan, tiny bit,
well,
but ready to go here another
Friday. But 105 out there, that tan's going to catch up on you.
Oh, yeah, a lot of sunscreen.
There you go, absolutely. I want to ask you about PASPA. We're on that 3-year anniversary, just the background of when PASPA was repealed and then also that process.
Yes, it was interesting. I think for a lot of people, it's just, you know, May 14th, another Friday. I think in the sports betting industry, it takes on a little more significance. This is it's really hard to believe. It's already been three years. You know, we had one state back in 2018, which was here in Nevada, that was for legal sports betting. Now we have 21 plus Washington, D.C., plus another six states that are legal but not yet operational. Mm-hmm. So again, getting to really that 27, over halfway of the U.S. And just an interesting kind of they had in 2017 in December was when the Supreme Court had the hearing, and then they can rule on decisions basically as soon as like a week after. Okay. But it's very interesting the way that, you know, in this technological age, the way that they rule is essentially there's a limited number of people who get into the Supreme Court, and they just say at 10 a.m. on certain dates they release the decisions for certain cases. They don't say which cases those are. So basically, you're just on Twitter, everyone who is covering this, and you're looking at the timelines from a couple of these reporters and then seeing, okay, what's in the case each day. And basically, it was, you know, week after week, they kept putting in new date. And essentially, this was like the 10th or 11th potential date that they could have ruled on it. They finally did in late May. We thought it was going to be in March, maybe in April. Finally, in mid-May, they did. But just really interesting to see kind of, you know, it was almost like when there's electing a new pope, right? You got the smoke coming out. It's essentially that kind of technological process where you had no idea. You had to be completely prepped. It was almost like, you know, if you guys were going to do a show 10 times, you had to be in the studio ready to go. And I was like, all right, no, it's good. Okay. Send them back home, you know. So it's just a very unique process, and it's come so far in only 3 years.
Yeah, it's amazing, Ben, that it's only been 3 years. And think about it, here in Colorado, we've been legal now for a year. It started May 1st of last year, and how things are just growing and expanding out here as far as bettors go, and bettors market for sure of all the access. You talked about some other states coming online soon and other states that are going through a process. What's going on down in the Sunshine State?
Yeah, so Florida is a really interesting, I think, you know, for everyone, obviously, Florida and Texas and California, right? Three giant states, certainly. And Florida was not one really a lot of people expected potentially this year or next year even would be legalized or have the potential to have sports betting. They are basically holding a session starting on Monday where potentially they could pass a bill. Again, a lot of things still to be figured out, but this is basically far more promising than I think anyone really thought would be with Florida. And, you know, Florida has 21 million people, so this is a gigantic market. There would be mobile wagering. It's just, you know, basically double, not double New York, but I think 1.5 times New York. Just a massive market, certainly. And as we've seen that expansion, you know, there always is the difference between, let's say, in Illinois coming online and in Arkansas coming online, right? They both are states, but they are gigantic, different markets. And Florida would be a huge market, the largest market so far to come online. If it did happen, it seems like it's trending that way, but just interesting that it's kind of coming along so quickly.
Sure. You know, Ben, I wanted to ask you this question in regards to mobile betting, because I'm hearing this more and more, that mobile betting is going to take people away from the sports books. And then also on top of that, mobile betting could take people away from games. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think that's probably going to happen. Okay. I think, again, in this past year, certainly with COVID and everything going on, 100% totally makes a lot of sense. We saw the proliferation of mobile and how important it was as well. Mm-hmm. You know, people were betting on table tennis, right? They're betting on anything because you're betting on your couch. You can't go anywhere. You can't go to games. I think a lot of people, you know, there's been a saying kind of, you can go to Six Flags or other things to ride the roller coasters, but Vegas is Vegas, mm-hmm. right? Like it's the Disney World, I guess. You're always going to go there. And I think there's so much in all of that, going to games. It's going to help, certainly. We've seen in states like New Jersey where 80-85% of these wagers are mobile. But I don't think that means people aren't going to go to games. They're not going to go to sports books. Anyone who's been in a sports book knows there's just a different environment. There's a different atmosphere when you have money on the game and you're around all these other people. Again, it can be a positive experience or a negative experience, but it's a very different experience. I don't think that's going away anytime soon.
Ben, to your point right there as well, like if you're just here, we talked about this to start the show today. I'm sitting here in my bunker command center here in my basement on my own. Now I'll have games on later and if I'm betting games. But I think the monotony of doing that, and you're just if you have access to be able to get to a sports book and get into the atmosphere of it, so you can get it can be a grind betting sports. And if you're betting sports every day, I don't bet sports every day. I'll take days off. I'll take time off just to get away from the grind of it and the monotony. Not any of it, but if you have access, and whether it's Las Vegas or other casinos across the country that have sportsbooks, even just to get to a different atmosphere, you're kind of around your brethren, right? And it kind of picks up your energy, and now you're re-engaged again and lively again about betting sports. So I think even from that standpoint, if you have access to be able to get to a sportsbook, yeah, it's easier to do it from home, and you're going to do it sometimes more so at your home. But anytime you got a chance to be out there and be in the energy of a sports book, especially like looking at right behind you guys there at the South Point, it's always fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, I think, again, we're going to see that more and more with the more states, more professional sports teams, right?
Right.
If you're in Pennsylvania, you're probably going to go with a bunch of Eagles fans to bet on the Eagles, root for the Eagles, and go to a sports book there or go to the stadium. It's just a social experience as well. I think we'll continue to see more of that.
I think you're right. Both of you guys are right. I had a blast in the sports books last year, as well as betting on my app at the same time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's so new still. I mean, it's just 3 years, and so all those opinions are out there.
Yep.
But yet still a ton of growth. But Ben, thanks again for your time.
Of course.
That was awesome. Great discussion right there. When we come back, we got some leans, picks, updates on Major League Baseball, all that and more coming up next right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Than a final score with One Game Parlay at BetMGM. One Game Parlay is an exciting feature designed to help you make selections within a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. You can make One Game Parlay bets on upcoming MLS and NBA games, with more sports coming soon. Log into your BetMGM account and create the parlay of your dreams before the game starts. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be at least 21, located in Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, or West Virginia. Excludes Michigan dissociated persons. Please gamble responsibly if you feel you have a problem. It's 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado, Nevada, and Virginia. 1-800-270-7117 for help in Michigan. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana and Tennessee. Call or text the red line 800-889-9789. Welcome back to the program. It's Betting Across America, and we are presented by BetMGM. Mike Pritchard, James Salinas with you today. James, we previewed that game at the beginning of the show, Chicago and KC. KC's on top in game one right now. I believe the score is 5-2 over Chicago.
Yeah, 5-2, top of five here of the first game of the doubleheader today. Royals had lost 11 in a row.
Right.
Usually that's you think about the urgency, right? And I think that's where you with teams, and especially with a team like Kansas City with some veterans on that team, thinking about Salvi Perez. He goes yard, he hits a three-run bomb. And, you know, there's just got to be a sense of urgency anytime you're losing 11 in a row, especially the way the Royals started the month of April, right? How they got off to a really good start and then losing an 11 in a row. You're going to have losing streaks in baseball. You just don't want to get it to double digits. I didn't want to back Chicago. They have been playing very well and not land $2. And Giolito banged around pretty good today. Didn't locate very well. Three walks within five innings. So really a struggle. Had a high pitch count through five innings. Still not quite as sharp, nearly as sharp as what we expected from what he did last year. But it's still early in the season. So nothing to get too concerned with Giolito at the moment, but looks like Kansas City just got to get six more outs and they will have broken that 11-game losing streak.
Yeah, you got the doubleheader game one right there, so you have a seven-inning game. Coming into this matchup too, Chicago 8-2 in their last 10. And they had a great run with the first five, too. I know a lot of bettors have cashed some tickets that way, too. So that momentum against, 11 losses in a row right there for the Kansas City Royals.
White Sox started hitting the baseball. They have speed. There's actually a team with some speed out there. Not that they're stealing a ton of bases, but anytime you can try to scratch out and manufacture run, the ball is not carrying out of the ballparks like it has in years past. So you're going to have to be able to manufacture some runs and go from first to third on a hit to right field and have the speed to do it, as opposed to some of these other clubs that we're going to talk about, a couple baseball games that I have today that are purely just a bunch of slugs out there, station to station, baseball, waiting for somebody to hit the ball over the fence. So I think that's where anytime you have the ability, you have speed, and guys can put the ball in play and move runners over as opposed to, you know, first to third rather than station to station, you don't have to string as many hits together because, the home run ball is not flying out of the park like it has in years past.
All right, well, let's get to those games because you're in the bunker. And the frame of mind is a little bit different than the command center. So I'm eager to hear these thoughts here, James Linus. The New York Yankees are at the Baltimore Orioles. The Yankees are -175 out here in Vegas. 8.5 is the total.
Big number there again for the Yankees going and playing the Orioles and Dean Kramer. Now, Kramer, they banged him around. He's already faced the Yankees twice this season. In those two starts, only lasted 7 1/3 inning, 15 hits, 9 earned runs, and 3 homers. So they're seeing the ball really well out of his hand and banging the ball around. Thought about playing that or maybe the team total with the Yankees, but they have some injuries to that lineup as well as some COVID issues that happened and a little bit of an outbreak. I think they were talking about the fact that they had been vaccinated and they were thankful that it wasn't worse than what it ended up being within the clubhouse. So I don't think the lineup is going to be as intact tonight. So I didn't want to go that route. I'm still kind of finding some of those, Pritch. This is not going to be sustainable. I've been firing on some of these pitcher props. Hit another one last night that we talked about there and with I forget who it was that we fired on, but it was with Foltynewicz going under his outs.
Right.
Yes, right, for one of his first starts on the road against Houston. Didn't last the 17 outs. He only went 15. But here's where I'm going with this game here. I'm going to go with Corey Kluber. His out total right here is at 17.5. I am laying some juice at it, $1.30. But he's coming out. He's been getting stretched out more. So I think early in the season, just weren't sure what to expect from Kluber. Back in the past, right? Obviously, Cy Young winner, great talent. Injuries really derailed him the last couple years. Coming now into the Bronx, took him a little time. They kind of worked with him and brought him along slowly, stretching his arm out. But each of the last three starts, he's exceeded his pitch count. So each game, each start keeps growing and growing. And here, he's already faced Baltimore. He faced them a couple weeks ago, 6 2/3 inning, only gave up one run. His last three starts, he's gone nearly 100 pitches, upper 90s in each one of those. Now he's lasted 20 1/3 innings here. So I'm going to go over his out total here at 17.5. Did have to lay the juice, but I think he gets through six against this weak-hitting Orioles lineup.
Okay, how about Cincinnati and Colorado? Probably a lot of offense in this one. The 10.5 is the total. And then you have Colorado -111 at home here in this matchup.
It's Marquez. So Marquez is on. And I think for Herman, he's pitched very well here. And he's been the best pitcher here for the last few years pitching in Coors Field. He knows how to pitch here. Now, I think there's a sense of redemption for Marquez. He did not. His last outing at Coors Field, he pitched on Sunday, pitched well, went 6 innings, gave a couple runs against the Cardinals on the road. But here, I think there's going to be some redemption that Marquez is looking for because he got shelled by the Giants his last start down the street for me at Coors Field. So I think here, this is Wade Miley getting the start for the Reds. Now, he hasn't pitched since last Friday because that was his. He threw 114 pitches in his no-hitter. He hasn't pitched since then. So coming off a no-hitter, a lot of times I'll kind of stay away from those pitchers that just came off a no-hitter or a spectacular outing like this. But in this case here with Miley, he's pitched in Coors Field plenty. His days with the D-backs, he's come here. He's had six or seven starts here. I forget. But he's had plenty of starts here. He's had some pretty good success here against the Rockies as well. So here's where I'm going with this one, Pritch. You talked about a lot of runs. It is a lot of runs when you get to see the bullpens for these two teams, in particular for the Rockies, who couldn't get out of that eighth inning last night. I think here I'm going to bet – what I'm going to do is I'm going to – I found an alternate total. I'm going to bet the under in the first five. I'm going to bet on both of these pitchers. I'm going with Miley as well as Marquez, looking to bounce back from that poor performance at Coors Field his last start here. I found an alternate line at six as the total, laying $1.30. I'm going to go under that first five right here. Just we talked about it. We talked about some of the speed on the White Sox and some of these other teams that have a bunch of slugs. There's not a team that's slower in baseball that goes station to station than the Reds. Free swinging team there. They've only got seven stolen bases on the season. It is total. If they don't hit it out of the yard, base to base, station to station. I don't like their approach at the plate. I don't like how they run the bases. They don't steal. Not a lot of pressure on. They're not really putting a lot of pressure on the battery for their opponents, right? The pitcher and the catcher aren't worried about having to look over and throw over and any kind of, anybody stealing any bases, because here they don't run. They're really slow on the base pass. So I think for Herman, I like where he's at. He's a tough kid. He's a competitive kid. I think he has a good outing tonight. I'm not going to get into the bullpens with these teams. So I'll keep it at the first five, alternate line under six, first five at $1.30.
Yeah, I would avoid those bullpens as well right there. The only question I would have is, can Marquez get that deep against the Reds lineup out there in Coors Field?
Well, I think for this lineup here, yeah, go ahead, keep chasing the ball, because they're going to free swing Suarez. So many of these guys, right? It's all or nothing for the Cincinnati Reds. Maybe part of it too for me is this is just not a lineup that I like. I don't like their approach at the plate. I don't like really how they play the game of baseball as offensively with station to station. And I've seen them run themselves out of innings too. Just running, you know, you never make the first or third out at third base, and running with the ball in front of them sometimes. Always make sure, freeze on the line drive, make sure the ball gets through to the outfield before you're running with the ball hit in front of you. Just little things like that I constantly see out of this Reds team, because I think they're trying to get little edges because they are just a bunch of slugs on the bases.
Okay, and so I have a note here that in the association, James, you have some interest in Utah on the road against OKC. This line right now, 220.5 at the total, OKC catching 15 at home.
Yeah, this line's continuing to climb. It was 14 earlier. I didn't lay the 14. I laid 8 in the first half with Utah. Laid 15 cents on it. Here, I'm looking at Utah. It's a bounce back game for them. This is a big game. Now, I'm not gonna say it's a big game anytime you're playing Oklahoma City. It feels like it's open run time for OKC, because I don't know who they're gonna put on the court tonight to compete against Utah. But Utah needs a win. They've lost their last two games. They're just one game ahead of the Suns for the number one seed. Now, to me, that's motivation. That's something to play for, to get that number one seed in the West. The Suns own the tiebreaker on the Jazz. So the Jazz finish out. They get to play OKC tonight, and then they finish out with Sacramento on the road on Sunday. So schedule's very favorable here. That's why I you know me, Pritch, I rarely lay big numbers in any sport, in particular the NBA. That's why I just went with the first half. I feel like for the Jazz, this is a place where they got to get themselves right. They got to get themselves not only going into the playoffs with some momentum, playing better, losing their last two, but knowing that the Suns are right on their heels. Suns very fortunate to win that game last night. Portland couldn't close out and shoot a couple free throws thanks to Covington. But I think here, Pritch, this is where I think Utah will bring the energy in that first. At least I think they'll bring the energy for sure to get started. They need to get off to a hot start. I laid the 8, laying $1.15 as the juice here. I don't want to lay 15 or 14 because they're not trying to cover these numbers. This could be somewhere where they start. They get a big lead. Who knows what it looks like garbage time in that fourth quarter, but I like Jazz laying the 8 in the first half.
Yeah, being smart right there. Nice approach as we approach the NBA playoffs. I think everybody's looking forward to those. Good luck with your plays. Outstanding job this week, James. We'll look for you this weekend on Betting Across America as well.
Have a great weekend, my friends. Stay safe out there.
You do the same. Coming up next on VSiN, my guys in the desert, right here on the Sports Betting Network.